I'm a capitalist with a social conscience. That's the quote from Action SA's Herman Mashaba that stuck out with me during our conversation today. We speak about his humble origins in Hammanskraal, being raised by his sisters while his mother worked as a domestic worker, the role that women had and the importance they had in raising him, as well as his grandfather, who believed in him from the moment that he was born and that drove him and pushed him to achieve greatness and instilled in him a sense of value and responsibility for himself and his country. We speak about secret deals between the DA and the ANC and why he chose to start Action SA and get into politics with the view to taking South Africa back onto the right course. His feelings that the ANC have let down South Africa and why he lost faith in the ANC government 5 years after the first democratic elections. Herman is a passionate and focused man who brings a great sense of business and what it takes to build and develop partnerships as a way of building and growing South Africa. This is a conversation that all South Africans should listen to, as well as those in the international community who need to understand that South Africa, as Herman says, is not the ANC government, and South Africans are not the ANC. Welcome to Coffee and Conversations with Champions, the Leadership Edition. Herman Mashaba, it's a tremendous honor for us to have you on the podcast. Thank you for your time. Thank you for joining us today. And for those of us out there who don't know you, which I think is probably about maybe two people in the whole country, could you give us a little bit of a background as to who you are? Who is Herman Mashaba?
Oh, thank you very much for this opportunity. Herman Mashaba is a 64-year-old old man, born on the 26th of August 1959, a year after H.F. Verwoerd took over as the Prime Minister of South Africa. So you can imagine I was born in real difficult times of our history in a small village in Hammanskraal called Garamotse, which is about, 30-40 k's north of Pretoria. Yes, brought up in a child-headed household because my father decided to die when I was 2 years old, leaving my mother to look after us. And unfortunately for her to be able to look after us, she had to work in Johannesburg as a domestic worker and leaving me to be looked after by my sisters, the one in charge, only 13 years my senior.
Right. What was that like growing up in the Hammanskraal region at that time? And I must say, I think some of the best people in our country come out of Hammanskraal. Everyone that I've met that's come from there has been absolutely wonderful. What was that like as a community and an environment to grow up in?
Well, we lived really and deeply under really poor, trying circumstances. Mm. Grew up having to, at a young stage, going to steal water from the Africana farmers, the encampment from time to time, for us to really be able to have energy to cook. We had to go and steal wood because we were not allowed to go and just really fetch it. And electricity completely foreign to us. I only experienced electricity. Actually, in that village, even when I left, there were no electricity. That village only got electricity after the 1994 democratic dispensation. But obviously, later on, in my years when I was in high school, I lived with my sister in Temba, which is the township across from our village between Babelegi and Garamotse. And my sister over the years managed, and the husband built a house and electrified for the first time to live in a house where there was electricity. And at that time I was 15, 16 years of age.
Right. What You know, just on that point, and it's something that I've noticed in our country over the years, the woman plays such a vital role, you know, from the grandmother through the mother through the sisters. How important are women in shaping South African culture? And I'm not just talking about the gogo with a slipper or a sandal coming after to keep us in line. How important are women in South Africa?
Well, I think I'm a living example of being brought up by women because, as I say, my father died when I was 2 years old, but my mother and my sisters. And at the age of 22, I decided to get married so that I can have a woman who can really protect me. And this past Sunday, my wife and I just celebrated 42 years of our marriage. And if I look at the role that my mother played in my life, my sisters played in my life, and my wife played in my life, the men talking to you right now were shaped by women. I've never called someone dead in my life. Calling someone dead in my life is completely foreign because my mother never remarried.
Right. 100%.
I think I need to qualify this.
Yes.
Someone who played a very important role in my value systems and principle was my grandfather. On the day I was born, on the 26th of August, 1959, for some reason, he happened to have been home and went from house to tell everyone, calling me high man, which was not my name. My mother and father given me Samte Philip as my official names, but for some reason my grandfather decided to disregard them. I don't know whether he knew what high man was, but he was going around to the house to house, late in that community, to tell them high man is born. And then I happened to be called high man by the entire community, including my own parents. So I grew up being high man, and by the time I reached 14, 15, this high man was too much, because my grandfather played such a key role in my life in defining who I am in terms of the values. He taught me and instilled in me a sense of self-reliance. He taught me the discipline. He taught me the value of believing in God and believing in myself. It gave me self-esteem and instilled me a sense of success. Really, throughout his life, from the day I was born until he died in 1978, for him, all the time when he was home, he instilled a sense of success in me that I cannot fail. I must only accept failure after trying. And that's how later on, unfortunately, he was already gone by then, because he died in 1978 when I was in matric. But you can imagine, at that time as a young person, I used to despise my grandfather. I thought he was just too much on me. I used to feel that my grandfather's expectations of me were unreasonable. But I tell you, when I reached 22 and I realized I was running out of time, I was getting old and I needed to do something to succeed, because my grandfather instilled in me throughout his life that failure in my life is not negotiable, and I must always make sure that I'm in charge of my own life.
Right. And he's obviously still with you now, keeping an eye on you.
I can assure you the weight, because I think the older I get every day, the more I actually appreciate the role that is played in my life. And unfortunately, it's not that that I can physically thank him, but I do it. I thank my grandfather for the work that I do. When I went into business, when I got married, I went into business. I was really lucky. I succeeded. And as part of Really, some of the principles my grandfather taught me was to take personal responsibility. And in my late 50s, decided to take the responsibility to save my country and free it from the misrule that we've experienced in the last, 25 years of our new democratic dispensation.
So he really, the sense I get is your grandfather knew the path that you were on. And he was just there to remind everybody of where you were going. That's absolutely wonderful.
You can, I can ask you, you can go to that village where I was born and ask anyone older and my age. They know the pressure this old man used to put upon me. He used to work as a security guard in Harangua for the Harangua municipality and used to come home every month. And then obviously he'll be home for a week during Easter and December he'll be home the whole month. Everyone knew the pressure this old man put in me. That's why I used to really feel really very bad. That's why I ended up changing this Hyman to Herman.
Herman, okay. But what got you to accept the pressure? Because I think a lot of people that are put under pressure, particularly youth or kids, you know, they rebel completely the opposite way and that pressure can almost break them. What made you decide that you were going to honor your grandfather's view and vision and intention for you?
I think it's really, for me, it's natural what I do. What I do every morning before I wake up, I ask for God's blessings for every decision that I take. I know I have to take responsibility for the decisions that I've got to take, but what I do every morning, I ask for God's guidance that whatever decision that I'm going to take on that particular day, I've got to take it with the right intentions. It is for that reason, you know, for me, that no human being can ever hold a gun at my head for smaller than nothing. I think it's whatever I've done in the 64 years, even mistakes I've made, no one can ever hold them against me because I've never acted in a malicious manner. And that's what my grandfather taught me, that life is not perfect and it will never be perfect. And he used to tell me that as a human species, God has given you this brain to use, but always exercise it in a manner that you must feel comfortable. Is it whatever you do, is it acceptable to God? And that's how I run my life. And sometimes people think I'm tough, I'm stubborn. Unfortunately, that's how I was made, because when I believe in something, I do it, regardless of how other people actually feel. Because one of the things that I've been really taught was that I must never allow friendship to determine my decisions, because that's very, very dangerous. Because relying on someone else's advice, the person might obviously be giving you malicious, might have a malicious agenda. If one thing taught me to listen to people and take advice, but ultimately I must take ownership of the decision that I've made. Whether the decision I've taken is right or wrong, I must all take ownership. I must never just say, no, I took this decision because of so and so. If I've taken a decision, I've listened to people, I've accepted, then I must take personal ownership of the decision that I've taken. And that's how I operate. That's why throughout my life, I've never really been the one to be swayed by mob psychology. I don't really just follow other people blindly.
So that's sometimes, you know, success is going in the opposite direction to the mob many, many times. So before politics, you were known as one of South Africa's top entrepreneurs, a business leader, someone who came from a very, very difficult place in terms of opportunity and sort of what was made available to you. What got you to the point of you want to build up your own business, your own empire, rather than going to look for a job as an example. Because I think entrepreneurship is something so valuable. Oh, sorry. Yep.
What happened, education has always been really key for me.
Yes.
And when I wanted to pursue my education route, I went to university in 1979.
Mm.
Unfortunately, during the second year of my studies at the University of the North, the apartheid government decided to close the university due to protest activities at the time. And when they called us back after a month or so, I decided not to go back. I wanted to focus my energies on leaving the country to go here for military training. But mm-hmm. God had another plan for me, shielded me from getting reliable contacts to get me to leave the country. And I thought in the meantime, while I was waiting for the contacts, let me find employment. Those days in South Africa, mm-hmm. people who did not work were those who did not want to work. Employment opportunities were everywhere. You could jump from one business to the other if you felt exploited. And I'm actually a living example of someone who exploited business, because
right.
I worked 30 months in my life for two companies. 7 months for Motani for Spa Pretoria as a dispatch clerk, and mm-hmm. 23 months for Motani Industries, both as a dispatch clerk. And I keep telling this, which is true, that when I worked for Spa, when I worked for Motani, I wasn't working for them. I actually exploited them because they paid me to get experience, because mm-hmm. it's something that I recognize that, you know what, with not obviously getting my university degree and being able to leave the country, the only way I can do is to one day go into business. But before going to business, I needed experience. And I exploited business. I exploited Spa, giving me 175 rands a month. And they thought they were exploiting me. In the meantime, they gave me 75, they paid me 75 rands to give me the experience.
Mm-hmm.
And 7 months later, joined Motani, worked for them for 23 months. And then 30 months later, I turned 22. They realized that I'm 22, I'm getting old. I needed to succeed, and it's time for me. At that time, I'd already saved enough money to buy a motor car, because mm-hmm. I needed to really be a commission sales rep, because we are not allowed as black people to go into normal business. But
yes.
before going into business, I needed stability in my life. God gave me the wisdom to recognize stability, to mm-hmm. be a successful business. That's why before buying the car, I got married. 2 months later, bought a car. 2 months later, resigned. Everything mm-hmm. else is history.
Right.
I started selling stuff on commission basis, including in 1983, came across a company in Johannesburg. They had a brand called Super Kale. I sold for them for 19 months. And during that 19 months, I discovered a money printing machine. And mm-hmm. But I decided I'm not going to print money for someone else. I'm going to do it myself. And because of my views in life, something that I feel really very proud about, because you can imagine, I had no technical know-how to make mm-hmm. this product, but I wanted to make them, and I said, I'm going to make them. I approached a white Afrikaner working for this company who was a chemist, and I took a chance. I said, Johan, Joseph and I can sell this product. You can make it. We're making money for someone else. Why don't we make money ourselves?
Mm-hmm.
And everything else is history. You can imagine in 1984, approaching a white Afrikaner, a relative, only discovered it's actually his wife, Johan's wife, was related to the owners of this business. So you can imagine if this guy had declined my invitation.
Mm-hmm.
But one thing, because of my upbringing, because of the teachings of my father, my grandfather, is that you can only accept failure after trying. And now, approach Johan Krill, he accepted. I looked at the positive side of life. I did not really say, no, this is a white person. I did not care about Johan's racial makeup mm-hmm. on how God created him. I needed his expertise, and Johan needed my expertise as a salesperson. and everything else is history.
Fantastic. Can you give us a little bit of insight into what it was like building your business then during the apartheid era? Because there were time restrictions when you could be out. There were, you know, restrictions on everything that you encountered. What got you to push through? And the reason I'm asking that is talking to the youth of today, where there's opportunity and ease to start your own business with the internet and everything that's available to them. If we can talk about how challenging it was when you started to build what you built.
You can imagine in 1985, when I started the business in Harankua in Bophuthatswana at the time, in a 200 square meter factory. At the time, PW bought having state of emergency, traveling, getting into townships all over the country. There will be the army in every in every entrance of a township. Black people not allowed to open salons everywhere and so forth. So it was really quite a challenging. Also, at the time, the pass laws were still applicable. So you can imagine, I had my own factory, and the only way that I could avoid being arrested in Pretoria or Johannesburg or Cape Town was to always have the mastery to duck and dive from the police. I was a business owner paying taxes, but I had to duck and dive from the police because those days, as a black person with your reference book, it had to be signed on a monthly basis by your white employer, given restrictions where you're supposed to be. And I decided, no, I'm not going to be restricted by this. And I became a master of ducking and diving from the police. And not once was I ever arrested for a pass offense. I would always negotiate my way out. That's one thing I learned at the time, to make sure that every morning when I leave home, I'm in a suit and a tie. And that made it easy to negotiate my way out if I get cornered by the police.
Right. Absolutely fantastic. You spoke a little bit earlier about what you've seen happen with the country over the last 24, 25 years. How was your sense and your dream for South Africa after the 94 elections, you know, winning the Rugby World Cup? There was the sense of euphoria, the Rainbow Nation. What were your hopes and dreams for South Africa then?
You know, when I voted for Nelson Mandela on the 27th of April, 1994, including obviously prior to that as black business, how we used to assist some of the so-called comrades when they got into trouble, help them to get lawyers and so forth. And I voted for Nelson Mandela and the ANC because we grew up regarding them as our liberators, people who had a social conscience. And I thought I was going to see an explosion of the Hermann Mashabas, because I'm not a unique person and I did not really do anything unique. You just really need a government that can create an enabling equal opportunity environment. Unfortunately, we only enjoyed real true democracy and proud South Africans just over 5 years of Mandela's tenure, because as soon as Thabo Mbeki came and I voted for him in 1999. But that's when I discovered the ANC not really be the party that I grew up thinking that they were, that this for me was more of a criminal enterprise than people who were concerned about the plight of South Africans, particularly blacks, were oppressed under the many years of colonialism, many years of the National Party brutality. I thought it's going to be a party with a social conscience. I'm afraid today, I don't know, sometimes it becomes difficult for me when I have to do a comparison between apartheid and the ANC government in terms of who's better. Honestly, I find it difficult because I live in a country where today 86 people are being murdered every day. 11 minutes as a woman in this country is raped recorded cases.
Yes.
I live in a country where we've got open the borders, where you have international drug cartels associated with international terrorist organization. They come into our country, give drugs to our youth, rob them of their future, and in the process disrupt our families. We sit with the highest unemployment rate in the world. So I think, honestly, personally, I think if I do a comparison, and I remember at university, and I'm a student of history, even when I left university, I still, I'm an avid reader. And you know, it's part of what I was studying. I was studying political science. You do comparisons of political systems or governments. Mm. So right now, honestly, every time I actually do notes to really look at apartheid and ANC, who's better? I find it difficult to reconcile, to say which one was better. I find both systems being brutal, being evil.
Mm-hmm. So your time after, so 5 years after Madiba is elected and South Africa becomes a democracy, through to the birth of Action SA, what was your thought process? What brought you to starting the party and to starting Action SA?
Okay, would you guys give me a minute to charge my my laptop is not on charge. Just give me a minute.
There's perfect.
Here.
Cool.
Great. Sorry for this.
No problem.
Yeah, because I just really rushed in to do this interview.
Thank you. We appreciate
that. In my mid-50s, or actually earlier than that, you know, after actually having the losing confidence in the ANC, I started looking for a political party to vote for, and I started voting for the DA. And I used to really be vocal about some of the things that South Africa was not doing right, particularly it started with passing of what are called draconian labor laws, making it difficult for businesses, particularly SMEs, to thrive. I mean, the influence of COSATU and the so-called South African Communist Party, it's a curse to this country. Mm. And I started raising this with the ANC colleagues to say, guys, you are going to destroy businesses. Communism has never worked out. You guys... you must have studied this. You know, from 1917, when Lenin and Stalin took over Russia, look at every country in the world. Communism cannot really be the answer to prosperity and giving black people the prosperity that they deserve. You know, and then look at this government. The first big investment that they made was on the arms deal. At the time, South Africans, black South Africans, needed housing because apartheid government was never building accommodation for houses of black people. Land was an issue. Instead of addressing this, the first investment these people make is on armament. At the time, South Africa was the darling of the world.
Yep.
And you raise these matters with them to say, but guys, what do you need armaments for? The apartheid government, as you are aware, had one of the most powerful armies in the world. So in terms of the countries of their safety, we did not really need to invest in the armament. But at the end of the day, the reason why they went for investment in the arms deal was to start really stealing the public monies. And that's when I started having a fallout with them. And then compounded by the Zimbabwean situation, how Thabo Mbeki's quiet diplomacy that ultimately destroyed that beautiful country called Zimbabwe. Those are some of the things, examples, and lots more. But just to really give you a sense of things that really got me really disappointed with the ANC. And every time as a businessman, I will be invited to speak to people on a regular basis. be it here in South Africa or anywhere in the world, I would not hold anything back about my unhappiness with what's happening in South Africa. And ANC started feeling that I'm a traitor. But that did not really deter me, because I wasn't really born to make friends. And, you know, and when I raised these issues, you know, to created a rift between me and some of the people in the ANC. But I was happy to live with it. And culminating in 2015, when the DA approached me to become their mayoral candidate for the city of Johannesburg, I tried to assist them to get someone else. Unfortunately, I did not succeed. No one wanted people who were credible, who could unseat the ANC, did not want anything to do with the DA. But at the time, for me, was the only option, viable option, to unseat the ANC. And I accepted, and I spoke to my family. They gave me the full support. And remember, August 2016, we removed the ANC from the city of Johannesburg in the first round. Ran a 7-way coalition government for 3 years, from 2016 to 2019. And my goodness, to my surprise, I think it's around about August 2019, that's when I came across secret meetings between the ANC and the DA, facilitated by the IRR, to have the ANC to come out with a motion of no confidence and mobilizing DA, some of the DA councillors to support that motion. So luckily, because I'm a son of God, and I wasn't born yesterday, people brought this to my attention, and I informed Musi about this, and giving him the evidence, and Musi failed to do anything about it. And and I warned South Africans beforehand. I said, if Ellen is elected to come back to the DA, because she's the one leading this negotiations with the ANC, I said, if she comes back to the DA, I'm afraid I will have to terminate my membership, stop being the mayor. And they thought I was joking. Ellen was elected on the 20th of October 2020. The following morning, 10 o'clock on Monday, called a press conference, I resigned. And, which was really quite, really sad. It was not an easy decision, but it's life. People will step you at the back. That's why, if what I've just said to you, grandfather taught me to be careful of human beings, because not all of them actually mean well. And but what is actually interesting about this development is that as soon as I resigned, the outcry of South Africans that I start my own political party, that's what led to the launch of the People's Dialogue, which I ran for 3 months because I wanted to test to see, I needed the scientific basis to see if these are real people. Say firstly, and secondly, I wanted to see if these people actually say the same values as I do. And everything else is history. I gave the assurance to my family, because I needed them to fund this very expensive project. And the family wanted me to give them the budget. I said, unfortunately, I've never run something like this. I don't know what it's going to cost. But wherever we're going to invest, it will be investing in the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our country. And the only guarantee I gave them was that if I have less than 500,000 signatories, I won't proceed. 3 months later, 2.4 million signatories. South Africans all over the country said I must start a political party. So that made it impossible for me to really turn people down, like, you know, because you can imagine when I resigned, at the time ANC and DA, remember, they refused to accept the responsibility. They said, no, I'm just coming out. Nonsense. But fortunately, you know, when you lie, it's impossible to always remember. 2 years later, in an interview with SABC, Helen Zille confirmed the secret meetings between the ANC and the DA. So, and I've accepted, because obviously I had evidence. I did not need Helen to confirm, but we've got an interview of Helen actually confirming the existence of this plan to oust me between the ANC and the DA. From the DA, my sin was that I was focusing too much attention on poor communities. And okay. For the ANC, they were scared of my resolve to pursue corruption charges against senior members of the ANC. So I think for the DA, it's unfortunate that I must be called an EFF mayor because I'm providing services to poor people, as if providing services to poor people is a preserve of the EFF. EFF that in government, in Ekurhuleni and everywhere else, are they providing services to poor people? And my entry into government, into politics, wasn't to serve a particular interest. I was there to serve all South Africans, particularly the poor. My view as a capitalist, I'm a capitalist who with a social conscience. I don't believe in saying to rich people, come down to the poor. I believe to say, poor people, let's uplift you. We encourage them to uplift them and work, all of us as privileged South Africans, let's yes. work together to uplift poor people. But unfortunately, DA doesn't believe in that. And the ANC is determined, completely determined to keep black people poor and dependent on the state, because they were taught by the best in the world, the communist Russia. They know how to oppress people and control them. You control people if you can obviously take away their self-dependence. Mm-hmm. So if you want to control people, tell them they are victims all the time, tell them they are slaves, tell them everything wrong with the government, it is got to do with apartheid. The president can have money under mattresses. No, it is HF ruled. Jan van Riebeck is a mistake. It's got nothing to do with us, you know. So unfortunately, that's a kind of the political environment under which we operate. But we're determined as Section SA, we are here to ensure that people wake up to their lived experience. And I'm really so pleased that people are responding more than positive. I think this was demonstrated by our electoral support we received in the 2021 local government elections, supported by 9 by-elections we've already run. We are ready right now as I'm speaking to you. I'm in Soweto, going to be spending the full day here. Mm-hmm. Last week, I announced the two last premier candidates, the Western Cape and Gauteng. So Action SA is ready. We've got all 9 committed South Africans. Yesterday, we paid our fees with the IEC. This morning, I'm sure by now, because first thing this morning, our governance the department was going to submit the list of our candidates. So we're ready. We're waiting for 2029, then let's see how South Africans are going to vote. But we're confident of success, because I'm not in this game to be in opposition. I don't need the job as a member of parliament. We need to govern. We need to govern. That's the only way I believe I can make a difference to the lives of South Africans, is being in government. And being in government, that means you leave friendship out and really focus on people of South Africa.
What are your goals for the country? Where would you like to see South Africa go? What would you like to do to guide South Africa to where you would like it to be?
First of all, obviously, I think, you know, our first order of business is to ensure that we don't end up with an ANC government. Obviously, mm-hmm. That's very important. Okay, if we put that aside, then okay, why then do you want to remove the ANC? So that we can come out with programs to do away with all race-based policies in South Africa.
Mm-hmm.
We must treat South Africans as South Africans. We suffered under apartheid. We suffered under ANC's discriminatory laws. We need to unite this nation, because united as in one nation will make the great. We're losing skills every day because of our racial policies. We need to bring the rule of law. We need to bring specialized units. We must, as a matter of agency, bring the Scorpions back to deal with cases of corruptions. We need to bring called the Brixton Maiden Robbery Squad.
Mm-hmm.
We can't live in a country where 86,000 people are murdered every day and we think it's normal. We need specialized units who must deal with these cases of murder. We need to deal with this rapist. We need to declare war against drug cartels. We've got to chase them away from South Africa. And we've got to do away with the parole for murderers, rapists, and drug play drug cartels.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to invest short term on establishment of a drug rehab center for our youth who are victims. They are not the ones we need to focus. We need to bring build the drug. While we're chasing away drug syndicates, we're not going to achieve that objective overnight. So that's why in the meantime, we must invest immediately in drug rehab center so that these kids must be given another chance. We need social justice. We need to deal directly with this issue of inequality in our country. We believe as Section SA, the only way we can deal with inequality, we strongly believe in black economic empowerment, not the ANC broad-based black economic empowerment of 2003 that divides us along racial lines. So what we are saying is Action SA, we must come out with our own policy called inclusive economic empowerment, where we have an opportunity fund run by professional people accounting to parliament on an annual basis. Let them report how much money they've collected, and we as government guide them where they must go and use this money. They must go and build schools in poor communities, clinics. Make sure that they go and fund the black entrepreneurs in the townships and so forth, to give them opportunities because obviously getting funding for them from businesses. But we don't benefit individuals. We must benefit society. We must build boarding schools. We must go and work with the private sector to build affordable accommodation for poor communities. We cannot live in a country where people live in squalor when the private sector is prepared to build affordable accommodation. All these hijacked buildings in our cities, all over the country, give them to the private sector. These factories in Babelegi Garankuwa industrial area where I started, give these factories to private sector investments, South African and international, rent-free, give them massive tax breaks depending on how much money they're going to invest in our country and how many people they will invest. So this is some of the broad urgent things that we really need to do post the removal of ANC from power.
Right. But, and what I hear you talking about are not things that are difficult to implement. It's just choosing the right partners and working with the right partners to implement these things.
Things that I'm articulating or ventilating, you don't have to be a rocket scientist. You just really need a political will. When I was the mayor of the city of Johannesburg with the inner city rejuvenation, protecting the residents of Johannesburg, making sure that every month I have the press conference, report the crime stats in the city of Johannesburg. I know the province and national police were not that happy with me, but at the end of the day, it was the right thing for me to do the report. The JMPD every day, need to they must report, and then end of the month with the chief of police, we report to society on the type of crimes that that we are facing and what we've done with those cases, including obviously members of the police who we were found to be on the wrong side of the law. We expose them, and those who are doing the right things, we give them awards and give them recognition. These are things that honestly, you don't have to be a rocket scientist or be an Einstein. These are things that are honestly, they just require the logic and the commitment and the will to do.
I think that's your experience as well from business and running businesses. You know, these are the simple things to implement that have a big difference and a profound impact.
Absolutely. I think that's what I'm saying is, you know, honestly, if we're not going to unite as South Africans to coexist, this country might as well just forget about success. I think I've learned, I'm a living example of 40 years of working with South Africans during apartheid days, when PW Botha and the National Party said you cannot work together. I worked with South Africans. And 27th of April 1994, I wanted Mandela to take this to the next level. And you remember he came out with the Rainbow Nation. And that's why I was really so excited, because I knew and expected the Rainbow Nation to be an explosive economic miracle that the world has ever seen. What happened? These communist evil people, they've really destroyed everything else that they inherited in 1994.
So can South Africa be saved?
Well, I'm not really working because I have any plans of failure.
There we go.
South Africa can really be saved, but it's not going to be saved by my prayers only. South Africa is going to be saved by hard work. That's the reason I'm talking to you. I'm right now in Soweto. You can look at you can follow our social media platforms. I'm going to be spending a full day in Soweto with thousands of volunteers doing house to house, making sure that we get the people to really go out and vote, because people have lost hope in our democracy. They don't realize the power of their votes. The reason I'm here myself leading this charge with a team of activists going house to house, covering every family, because of high unemployment rate. The great thing about it, people are home. 46-44% of people are unemployed in this country. So we're going to we're telling them, guys, you want employment, you want your dignity back. Let's vote this government out. The most powerful tool you have to really save yourself and your family, it's actually by voting this government out. And that's what we do. And fortunate enough, the reception is overwhelming. People also are tired.
Yes.
And the thing is, and people also wait to, you cannot lie to them that their lives have improved. No, I think if you want to upset anyone in Soweto, tell them their lives have improved. They know their lives have gotten worse.
Right.
In the last 30 years of our democracy, it improved the first few years, but I can tell you the last 20 years has been one way down.
So you've sort of answered my next question to say, but what do you expect from South Africans? And what should South Africans be doing in order to help save their own country?
Well, it's firstly to really get South Africans to participate. And those that have got the means, the privilege, and do not have the time to recruit, they must financially support political parties that they believe in. And not really underestimate the type of financial support you can give. You can imagine we what 87 days to elections. Political parties like Action SA, where we don't get support from Parliament, they've now increased the support to political parties by further from 1.3 billion rands to 1.5, and ANC gets 57% of that to fund their exploitation and abuse. political parties like Action SA, we don't get the support. We rely on South Africans, whether you give us 5,000 or 10,000, whatever amount that you can give, we as South Africans would appreciate it. Because as I'm saying today, I'm going to have a plasma between 500 and 1,000 volunteers spread across Soweto doing house to house. I need to make sure that they've got water, they've got drinks, they've got lunch, they're putting up posters. I need our policy documents that they leave in every house and so forth. All these things, they don't come from church or from the aid. I need the resources to really be able to have tools of trade to ensure that I can get more and more the South Africans on the day of voting to go out and vote. Because sometimes, privileged South Africans, they take things for granted, like poor people. Some poor people who are victims of ANC misrule, someone would be proud to say, I'm not going to vote too because the voting doesn't help. My goodness. Yes. And then on the other hand, you have a privileged person concerned about what's happening, and he says, no, I don't want to get involved. I'll just go and vote. People don't realize they can contribute financially in supporting political parties that they believe can do the right things. That's how democracies all over the world have really been built. So for some of us, with the work that we are doing, if South Africans are not going to support us, we can only work. Look, one thing for sure, whether the people give us financial support or not, we are going to contest. And the more resources we can get, the better chance of us getting the turnout. Let me just give you an example of the opportunity that exists to unseat the ANC. If you look at the ANC over the last three elections, in 2019, they were voted in by 10 million people. Only 18.6 million people voted. 17.3 million people did not vote. Half of the 17 million were not even registered to vote. This time around, because of Action SA's aggressiveness in voter education, at least we're sitting with 27.7 million people who are registered to vote.
Right.
And if you look at now ANC in 2021, they were voted in by just over 7 million South Africans. So if you now look at all the statistics, ANC, will they get 8 million people voting for ANC? They can ban the Mutis and whatever like they did in Kimberley over the weekend. There's no way ANC will get over 8 million people to vote for them. But we have a voting pool of 27.7 million people who are registered to vote. Now, the challenge is to make sure that we can get majority of them on the 29th of May to turn out to vote. And the only way to get them is not by having this discussion with you, or I can run do interviews on television, radio. It's door to door. Go into a family here in Soweto where the entire family is not working and they're registered to vote. You show them five of you. You know, the five of you will make a hell of a difference. You inspire them to understand the power of their votes on the 29th. And as I say, but now I need the volunteers, and volunteers who are not employed. So I need the tools of trades, like making sure that we've got posters, we've got T-shirts, we can feed these people as they're working, doing volunteer work and so forth. So the privileged South Africans can really play such a key role by giving donations to political parties like Action SA, committed to the success of our country.
I think going door to door and reminding people about the value of their vote is reminding them that they actually have power, they have control, and they can be in charge of where their lives are going, which is the voting is vital, but that's such an important thing to do for a community, is to remind them that they have power and control over their lives. Just on two points, speaking to Business South Africa and also to international business, in view of the poor communities in South Africa, how important is business and a good relationship with local and international business in building the country and bringing people out of poverty, growing the middle class?
Well, look, I think unfortunately business in South Africa over the last 30 years of our democracy have really been partied working with this ANC. Perhaps they thought ANC meant well. So I think unfortunately our business leaders in this country have been part of the problem because of their close relationship with the ANC. So unfortunately, big business has not really played a constructive role. Perhaps in their world, under impression, ANC is the only solution to this country, and some of us unfortunately differ with them. That close relationship and proximity with the ANC, that's what has led to the level of corruption, because they ended up in all their boards having this ANC corrupt people, getting them tenders and playing government relations job and so forth. So I think captains of industry in this country, to a large extent, not all of them, obviously, I think one should not really paint everyone with the same brush. But I think if you look at it at a bigger scale, and unfortunately, captains of industry in this country are part of the problem that South Africa is sitting with at the moment.
Right. What can they do in order to perhaps change the direction of where we are headed? Because I don't think, in my personal opinion, where we're headed is so good if we don't have a change, because we don't see things improving.
Well, the thing is, for as long as they are prepared to have this close proximity to the ANC, or being scared to speak out, because big business is too scared to speak out. I cannot really accept that as an independent person, a leader of society, because as captain of industry, you have the responsibility in a democratic dispensation to raise your voice. But majority of them are too scared to raise their voices. Perhaps they've got smaller nyanat skeletons. Unfortunately, you remember Dlamini once in the ANC. That's why they cannot speak, because they've got smaller nyanat things. Maybe some captains of industry, they've got smaller nyanat things. It is for that reason that they are silenced. I don't know. Right. I honestly, I can't speak for them as to why they are not openly raising their consent and distancing themselves from the ANC.
Why is why are the poor communities, and it's a question that can answer itself, but why are the poor communities in South Africa so vital, so important? Why do they need to be looked after as a priority?
Well, it's a moral thing to do. I think I don't want to live side by side with poverty. I was born in poverty, which was man-made by the apartheid government. My family wasn't poor because they wanted to be poor. My mother was hardworking. My father, I believe, was a hardworking, religious, God-fearing person. My grandfather worked as a security guard for the Karangua municipality. In his own life, never really achieved anything financially. The only thing he could live for me was his bicycle, which probably was 40 years old. That's the only thing I inherited from my grandfather. I never inherited anything from my father. So I don't want to live side by side with poverty. I've been fortunate enough to really have the financial independence to live anywhere in the world, but I've chosen to live here in South Africa and invest in helping South Africa not really be another failed African state. And the only way it can be done is getting the votes of the black majority, who are today not actually voting, and they're heartful with ANC, more especially here in Soweto. I mean, the people are heartful, but There must be some of them make wrong decisions by not going out to vote because they don't understand democracy. So that's why house-to-house visits are very important to make sure that we give them the power, because ultimately in a democratic dispensation, the voters are the bosses. But the ANC has actually instilled in the people a sense of dependency. Mm-hmm. And people don't were never given an opportunity to rely on themselves, because you deprive them of education, you destroy businesses, and you get people to live on 350 rands a month. You allow drug cartels to destroy them. So people are seeing this through, but some don't. So that's why it's important to do the work that I'm doing, mobilizing our activists here in Soweto and other places to do house to house to make sure that we can get majority of them. Because if we are not going to get the majority of South Africans to go out and vote, we might end up with another ANC government with less vote.
Yes, which is not sort of really where we want to be heading. So we are running out of time a little bit. We're very grateful for your time because we know you've got such a busy day today. What would you like to say in closing to South Africans and I think also to the world about South Africa?
I would really like to appeal to South Africans. Let us join hands, those that obviously are patriots, and not really be angry with South Africa. Let us be angry with the ANC. There's absolutely nothing wrong with South Africa. Mm. The problem is the ANC government. And let's work towards holding hands to ensure that we can mobilize South Africans to go out and vote on the 29th of May. We do our 87 days away, so we don't have time on our side. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, appeal to the international community, please, whatever the ANC is doing, please is not, ANC does not represent us. One thing I know, as Herman Mashaba, ANC does not represent me, and I know ANC does not represent the majority of South Africans. Please give us a chance to ensure that we can remove this government so that we can bring in a government that can work with like-minded civilized nations so that one day South Africa can be among the civilized nations, prosperous nations. We just need to really be given a chance.
Absolutely fantastic. Herman Mashaba, thank you so much for your time today. We greatly appreciate it. And looking forward to connecting with you maybe tomorrow as well, just to hear how it went today in Soweto. I'm going to finish the recording and then I'll just chat to you afterwards. So thank you so much for your time today.
Okay, thank you so much.
All right.